superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
While most of his contemporaries listen to Drake, a young guitarist channels Nick Drake to create his own unique sound.
Lavender smell.
We'll catch up with Nolan Selwood. But first...
This is my motorcycle!
She spent most of her youth on a farm near Ashland and then went around the world on a motorcycle.
I was trying to go through Russia. All of a sudden, I couldn't do it. And then I had to figure out, okay, what do I do?
Bridget McCutcheon shares her record-setting journey. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. For most of her 23 years, Bridget McCutcheon never traveled very far from her family's farm near Ashland, where she was raised and homeschooled. But at the encouragement of her brother, she decided to visit a foreign country, dozens of them, in fact, to circumnavigate the globe on a motorcycle, a feat that first entailed getting a motorcycle. She accomplished all that in pretty record time, I'd say, and last fall became the youngest person ever to do so, earning a potential spot in the Guinness Book of World Records. It has to be certified. And she joins me now from Ashland. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio, Bridget.
Hi, thank you, Robin.
So how far had you traveled from home before this trip? I'm hoping you made it to Duluth or Superior anyway, right?
Yes, I have. I have a little bit. The furthest I traveled away from home previous to this trip was to Aberdeen, Washington, where I worked on a tall ship known as the Lady Washington in late 2019, early 2020.
And I take it you did not take a motorcycle there.
I did not. I took a plane. I would later do my first motorcycle trip ever was to the same place and the same people. So sort of full circle.
And you're one of six. This was your brother's idea. Had your brother done anything like this, or was he just volunteering you to do all the dirty work?
I mean, he sort of was, but he had. So he had gone on a motorcycle trip to South America. And out of all my family, most of them have motorcycles, except for one of my sisters and my mother. But it's more for commuting than recreation or adventure. And he was the first one to take it, you know, sort of over, truly over the line between recreation and adventure. And he ended up going to South America.
Mm-hmm. And did you have a motorcycle at that time, or was that something you had to go get?
I did not. So when he was in South America, I was on the tall ship. And then I came home. And that fall, I got my first motorcycle. He had actually come back from the trip. And he actually helped me go get it. He drove it back from Duluth. I actually got it in Duluth. It was a Kawasaki Ninja 250.
Does it have a name?
It did. I don't have it anymore because I sold it right before I left. But I named it Traveler after a country song that I really liked. So I went on a Versys 300, which is, you know, approximately 50 cc's more. But who's counting? I'm counting.
Well, your route wasn't straight east to west or the opposite west to east, but you actually started out north to south. So tell us the first leg of your route.
Yeah. I went from like here in Wisconsin and I just went down to Texas and Colorado and then came back up to the west coast and then went all the way down.
Okay. All right. Got that straight. So tell us about that, because when you think of circumnavigating, you think of, you know, one direction. You start somewhere and you end somewhere else. And by the way, I have to give a true confession here. I always wanted to circumnavigate the globe.
Oh.
Yep. My father was a world traveler and that was his last trip. And I was just about to do the same, seriously, when pandemic hit. Yeah. So it kind of postponed that. But one reason I want to do it, I'm going to take a safe political position here that the world is round. And I want to prove it to anybody who would question that by saying, okay, I got on a plane here and I went one direction and then I came back to the same place. So that was a long diatribe on the route that you didn't take. You started basically north to south, and then you picked up in Europe. So tell me how you came up with that route and how that qualifies for the record.
Okay, there's a few requirements from Guinness that affected my planning of the route, and they are I have to go a minimum of 24,900 miles, which is pretty easy. That's the circumference of the equator. I have to go over two antipodal points, which are two points that directly oppose each other on the globe. So mine were, if you stuck a needle into Lima, Peru, it would come out in this tiny little corner of Thailand almost. Mm-hmm. So I had to go over two of those. And then I had to cross the equator at least once. So for me, the first place to cross the equator and somewhere to get a lot of miles was going to South America. And previously, my brother Thomas had gone to South America, but it was the beginning of COVID, so he had to leave his bike behind and he wasn't able to finish the trip. And so part of me going was like almost finishing the trip for Thomas. And I went to see his motorcycle and all that. I originally was not planning on going to South America at all. I was just planning on, you know, just going around the world by going pretty much straight east.
Right.
And going through Russia and being done. But then Guinness was like, oh, you need to cross the equator. You have to do all the other things. And I'm so glad that I went to South America because it's just fantastic.
We're speaking with Bridget McCutcheon of Ashland. Last fall, at age 22, she became the youngest person ever to circumnavigate the globe by motorcycle. She spoke about her trip to the Duluth Explorers Club recently. So, safety, what did you do to assure that you would be safe? And I know you brought along a friend, Kiva Carmen Frank.
Yeah. So I, as far as like my physical safety, just every day I wore, you know, motorcycle gear. I kind of looked silly, but I had these very large sort of enduro boots, which they come all the way up to below your knee, which for casual motorcycling, pretty much no one wears those. They're pretty much exclusively for off-road intense riding, which I wasn't really doing, but I didn't want to take the chance of breaking something. And then for the first part of my trip, I had an Aerostitch one-piece suit, the Roadcrafter, and I wore that pretty much exclusively until I went into areas of the world that were very hot. And then I switched over to pretty much auxiliary armor. And I looked apparently a lot like a Power Ranger.
No.
Because I would wear this armor on the top and it would go over my clothes. And then the knee pads would go under my pants. So I always looked like a Power Ranger with my helmet on and whatnot.
Well, okay. I guess that answers my question I was going to ask about personal safety in terms of crime or anything like that. No one's going to mess with a Power Ranger.
Well, for the most part, we only had really trouble once in Chile, and I'll get to that in a second. Personally, safety, the only weapon I had is called a Swedish brush axe. It's about a almost a foot long-ish blade, but it's sort of hooked at the end. It's meant for clearing brush, and that's what I used it for. It wasn't like a self-defense weapon necessarily, but it was for clearing brush, and we used it to chop through a tree in Mexico that was put on the road as a roadblock. So in Chile, me and my friend Kiva went to a store, and we had gotten relaxed, and we both went inside. When we came out, all of Kiva's belongings had been stolen. One of my tip bags had been stolen, and it was pretty shocking. We had gone through America, Central, most of South America at this point without any problems. You know, everybody was very welcoming, but, you know, our luck ran out, or so we thought. Immediately after this, we were staying in a hotel right next to where we got robbed because we were trying to find our stuff. Some motorcycle groups reached out to us online and they said, hey, we are doing a motorcycle event in Patagonia. We are stopping off in Santiago, Chile, which was very close to us. We can bring you stuff. And that's what they ended up doing, is they ended up bringing a bunch of replacement gear from one of my sponsors for Kiva and stuff for me. And it was this really great moment of the motorcycle world rallying to help people in need. And this happens all the time. Like, everybody gets it. So when you're in trouble, they help you. And like WEMA, which is like Women for Motorcycles, is the group that helped us. It was just very heartwarming because faith in humanity destroyed, faith in humanity immediately fixed. It was a good time, you know? Getting robbed, 10 out of 10. And then Kiva was with me from San Diego, California until Buenos Aires, Argentina. So everywhere there in between.
You picked up the trip after South America in Europe without Kiva, correct?
Yes. So I flew over to Madrid, Spain, which was sort of honestly very familiar because we had just left Argentina, and Argentina and Madrid and Spain have a lot in common. You know, they're both Spanish, both are very European. It wasn't super big deal, but it was for the first time in a long time, there was consistently people that spoke English. So it was so, and you know, European borders, it's just like the States. You just see a sign that says France and then you're in France. There's no border. Mm-hmm. I missed her a lot. I noticed that my tent, because we used to sleep in the same tent. It was like a sleepover every night. And I noticed I had so much more room to put all my stuff in the tent because her stuff wasn't in my tent too. But it just felt a little empty.
You spoke of the ease of going through European borders, but there wasn't ease everywhere. The war in Ukraine was raging while you were on your trip. So how much did you have to change your plans because of geopolitical situations?
I had to change my plan quite a bit. So everything was normal until I was communicating with Guinness in Buenos Aires, Argentina, and they basically said any record attempts going through Ukraine or Russia have to be postponed or you have to find a way around them. So basically, I was going to go through Russia and it was going to be one country, you know, one direction, no visas, no carnet, and I'll explain the carnet. A carnet is like a passport for your motorcycle and you have to put a large amount of money down in bond. It ensures that you're not selling your vehicle in their country, but it's very expensive. It depends on the value of your motorcycle. Mine was around $5,000, which was a lot of money. Yeah. Luckily, I have some very good friends that loaned me some money so that I could get that. But pretty much everything changed. I was trying to go through Russia. All of a sudden, I couldn't do it. And then I had to figure out, okay, what do I do? So I ended up going through the Middle East. So from Turkey, I would have gone to Russia, but instead I went to Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Oman, UAE, into Iran, and then Pakistan, India, Nepal, flew from Nepal to Thailand because Myanmar's land border is closed. So you can't go through India and Myanmar to get to Thailand, and then went to Malaysia and then flew the bike back to Canada and then came home. But because of that route shift, there was a couple things that made it very difficult. One of which was it was much more expensive for many reasons. There was more ferries, there was more borders, you know, and there was also going through Iran is very difficult as either someone from the UK, America, or Canada, and you have to have a guide the whole time and you have to pay the guide, and it's the getting the visa is very difficult. I was able to do that, but it was very, very difficult. And not even considering the borders and the politics and everything, instead of being in Russia in August, I was in Saudi Arabia and Iraq in August.
Ooh,
and it was
I get hot just
so
thinking that. Yes.
Hot. There was a day that I was riding, I think for around 2 days in Iraq, it was 136 degrees. Which if you don't know, that's you can cook bread at that temperature. So my little loafy self was just riding along the highway, cooking like a little piece of chicken.
Well, I guess I have to ask, and I don't want to get too political here, but in Saudi Arabia, there's, you know, our, I don't know if it's out and out prohibitions, but let's just say not much encouragement for women to drive cars, let alone motorcycles. Mm-hmm. Any issues with that?
There was. The first day I was in Saudi Arabia, I had driven from Iraq and then gone through Kuwait because I needed to get to Riyadh because I was getting my carnet, the passport for the vehicle, mailed to an associate in Riyadh, and I needed to get across the desert. And I went overnight and I stopped at a gas station, and there was some sort of police official, I assume, who sort of stopped me and is like. He didn't speak a word of English. And he was like, what are you doing? What's going on? And I'm like, I'm going to Riyadh. I think he was just very confused on what was going on. I was definitely very odd there.
Well, not to mention you're a Power Ranger.
Well, at this point, I had a jersey over the top of the motorcycle armor, so it looked less Power Ranger-y. Unless my hair was poking out the bottom of my helmet, which it wasn't when I was there because I would wear things over my head. You couldn't tell I was a woman. So most of the time people were so surprised that I was a woman on a motorcycle for them to have any other opinions about anything. People are always just very surprised mm-hmm. and concerned. They were never like, you shouldn't be doing this. They're like, what is happening? You're doing what? But it was never, there was no malice ever. Politically, there's definitely a lot going on in these countries concerning women. But as an outsider, I was held to different standards. And it wasn't, you know, it's not like one of their women running around on a motorcycle.
Okay. We are speaking with Bridget McCutcheon of Ashland. We're talking about her trip she completed last fall, circumnavigating the globe by motorcycle. Bridget spoke to the Duluth Explorers Club recently about the trip. So, Bridget, what's next?
Oh, boy. So, next is I go back to work. Luckily, I've managed to foist myself in a career that I really enjoy. I am a sailor. And I work on tall ships. I will be going to the East Coast to work on a tall ship called the A.J. Muirwald. They're a restored oyster schooner that primarily is an education vessel. So they'll take school groups out and they'll do day sails and teach about the bay around New Jersey and sort of up and down the coast.
And your favorite place of all those you visited?
Oh, boy. It's this is a really hard question. There's no one place that was my favorite overall. Thailand, the food, I really, really, really love Asian food. Mm-hmm. And I think in Thailand, in Malaysia, it was really great. And there was, it was so good all the time. But also, that's just for everyday food. Now for baked goods and pastries, I think Spain and France were the best. And it's mostly a food list.
Well, how about environment, scenery, beauty?
This one's really hard too. I think it's sort of a tie between Norway and Argentina. Argentina is just so gorgeous, and you can go from sort of up north, it's more lush, and then south you go and there's more deserted area, but the mountains are just amazing. But Norway has like all these fjords and all these beautiful mountains with giant waterfalls, and it's very green in the summer. It's hard.
And people.
I think the Irish were just so much fun. Oh my goodness. They were really so much fun. But I think as far as just being almost forcefully welcoming were the Arab countries. So Iraq in particular, but also Saudi Arabia, Oman. Iran, just really, I would go across borders and it's really hot and they'd be giving me water all the time. There was the border between Iraq and Kuwait. I believe it's Kuwait side. He had to do a lot of paperwork and he had to hand copy my paperwork over onto this other paper. There was a room off to the side. He's like, please, please come into this room. And there was couches, there was snacks, there was water. And he was like, please take whatever you want, take whatever you need. And I left there with like a pocket full of dates and two oranges.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Bridget McCutcheon of Ashland. Last fall, at age 22, she became the youngest person ever to circumnavigate the globe by motorcycle. Thank you for joining us, Bridget.
Thank you, Robin. It was great.
I see the sunrise creeping in. Everything changes like the desert wind. Here she comes and then she's gone again. And I'm just a traveler on this earth. Shut my heart behind the pocket of my shirt. I just keep rolling till I'm in the dirt, 'cause I'm a traveler. Travels far into your eyes. I've found that it never travels time. It never travels time. And knowing the light, and I studied it for some time.
Well, it is so sublime.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Nolan Selwood grew up in the Twin Cities suburbs, where he went to school and began learning guitar from his high school art teacher. And by the time he was 16, he began making his own music. He initially experimented in jazz, influenced by Michael Franks, but then he discovered the album Pink Moon by Nick Drake, an English folk artist who sadly only lived to age 26 when he died in 1974. Nolan's channeled Nick Drake and a few other esoteric influences to develop his own unique style, which he's honing as a student at the University of Minnesota Duluth. And he joins me now. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio, Nolan.
Hey, good to be here. Thank you for having me.
So what turned you on to Nick Drake, and how did you even hear of him when he died? As I said, probably when maybe your parents were kids.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just ventured into jazz briefly just from, I want to just discover what kind of music's out there. And I was around 14 when I tried to really listen to music, because it's always been in the background of, like, you know, my dad is driving me. So I heard a lot of people talk about jazz. I had a lot of friends that were in jazz band at school at the time. I started getting a little bit into folk because I loved acoustic guitar, just the sound of acoustic guitar. And Nick Drake was one of the first ones that popped up in just a random playlist that I was listening to. And instantly, I just fell in love.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to assume that many of our listeners never heard of Nick Drake, too. So you were ahead of them at age 14. Let's hear a little of his music.
I saw it written and I saw it say, Pink Moon is on its way. None of you stand so tall. Pink Moon, and I get you on the Pink Moon.
So that's the music of Nick Drake, who is an inspiration or a major inspiration to our guest, Nolan Selwood. Not to stereotype you, Nolan, because of your age, but shouldn't you be inspired by that other Drake?
You don't know how many, oh my gosh. I'll talk about Nick Drake to people in my age range, and they'll be like, Drake? I'm like, you listen to Drake? I'm like, no, I don't. Nick Drake. There's so many times in my life where I struggle to find people in my social circle that kind of have that same love for older folk music and British Isles folk that I do. And it's, you know, it's even more of a reason for why I want to try to make music, to try and branch out to that younger demographic.
Right. And it's not to say anything bad about Drake. And even if we did, it's not going to stop him from being the most recorded performer in the world right now or something like that. But it's different. And the current Drake is not known for his acoustic guitar, but certainly his talent is not to be questioned. In addition to Nick Drake, you have, as I mentioned, some other esoteric influences.
Yeah. A lot of British Isles stuff. Leslie Duncan, who was very close with Elton John, is a very, another great inspiration for me, as well as, you know, John Martin, other people like that. I've started branching into more Bob Dylan.
Well, Bob Dylan makes sense because when he was your age, I can say without sounding too much like an old person, he was doing the exact same thing, and he was listening to folk music that nobody really ever heard of, or nobody in the, you know, popular music scene at that time. Well, let's hear some of your work. How about Lavender? Can you set that one up for us?
Yeah, I have a really close friend in college now who loves going to, like, candle shops and, you know, lotion smell places. And he always goes for the lavender smells. And I don't know why, but for me, it's not that I don't care for lavender, but lavender has always been a smell that's been very sort of weird. And I wanted to write a song about that feeling.
All right. And you have succeeded in communicating smells on the radio. All you had to say was candle shop, and I can't get that out of my nose right
yes,
now. So
yes.
I'm going to put it in our ears. Here is Lavender by Nolan Selwood.
Lavender smells a little off to me, just to a degree. Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just me. And at the sea, my reflection's there, along with my stare that comes everywhere. Take it if you dare. Goodbye to the sea, where my reflection's lost. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. But as the dandelion spark, their small farewells to the ocean shells, like how lavender smells. Skulls which you breathe believes in me, and in the mirror what you see keeps you from being free. Keeps you from being free. And the fog that comes from the shade, flower and cross, I know it takes a lot. Every time you fought, sometimes it takes a lot. I'll gather the firewood, then we'll gather the sun. Stillness of this permafrost, and of what we've lost, and at what cost. Lavender smells a little different now. Can't you tell? Can't you tell?
And that was Lavender by Nolan Selwood. He'll be appearing at Sacred Heart Music Center in Duluth on April 5th. So you're a student at UMD. Are you a music major or some other discipline?
Not a music major. I'm taking a lot of music classes. I'm a major in psychology and a minor in political science. But music is more of just, I want to try to craft my own stuff. So the fact that I'm not too educated in it, like I just started learning guitar not too long ago, and even then music theory was never in the conversation. It allows me to try to be more creative and unique in my crafting. Like I go to a lot of different tunings. I'm always tuning my guitar to wacky and interesting things. Like a lot of folk songs are tuned in a lot of different things, and that allows me to create a unique sort of interesting style purely
from
the heart.
Your decision to major in something else, you're actually following advice I would have given you had I seen you to give you that advice. I've given it to many of my journalism proteges not to major in journalism, because we can always teach you those skills of how to go out and report a story, but we can't teach you how to think. We can't teach you how to respond to somebody who's telling you something quite emotional, you know, when you're reporting that story. So, yep, going for psychology and political science, I think, is great. You've got my approval on it. You didn't ask for it, but I think you got a promising future there. Let's hear another one. Forthcome, and that's not forthcoming, but Forthcome. What's that about?
Forthcome is it's the general idea of giving yourself the ability to love and to be loved. As a psychology major, I deal with a lot of issues dealing with love, and you have to give yourself the openness to be able to receive love, even if at the moment you might not be ready to give it. So I see it a lot. People are so afraid to accept that they can be loved, and the song talks a little bit about that.
Great. Putting your psychology studies to good use. Here is Forthcome by Nolan Selwood.
Light travels far into your eyes. I've found that it never travels time. It never travels time. Knowing the light, and I've studied it for some time. Well, it is so sublime. Virtue which tears us apart. the song that you probably cannot see. It's where your heart will let itself for free. Just don't forget it was just you and me. And forth come to my love, despite how exhausting it can be.
That was Forthcome by Nolan Selwood. He'll be appearing at Sacred Heart Music Center in Duluth on April 5th. You mentioned your album, but you got a couple of them, so tell me what they are.
Yeah, we have a second album coming out, Cadence to the Flame, in June. My debut album was Otherwise. Cadence to the Flame is just taking all of the ideas, all the stuff that I've learned, and making an album that I'm truly 100% really, really confident to bring out to the world.
Where can we learn more about Cadence of the Flame and all your work?
Yeah, you can go to nolanselwood.net, NolanSelwood.net, or you can venture off to the New Folk Records website, and they have all of amazing musicians that record there, including me, and they will have a ton of information.
Great. How about one more to take us out, Like a Sailor?
Yeah, Like a Sailor, a lot of the songs you're supposed to make your own inference on the meanings. For me, it's a lot about passing of a loved one, stuff like that, where you feel a big thing that gave you structure in your life suddenly goes away. And, you know, you're always supposed to make your own inferences. But for me, it's one of my more sentimental songs.
All right. We've been speaking with Nolan Selwood. His upcoming second album is Cadence of the Flame. He'll be appearing at Sacred Heart Music Center in Duluth on April 5th. Thank you for joining us, Nolan.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
I don't know what to say or do. Being trapped here without you, and I'm like a sailor, and you're like a star. Guiding me to safeties I admire from afar. Tenderness given as I came along. You showed me what was out there and what won't be here for long. Thank you.
Coming up, the regional news and review. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and we're joined by Rick Lubbers of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hello, Robin.
And Maria Lockwood of the Superior Telegram. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Robin.
So, Rick, the biggest story in the region has gone national and even international, and it's all about Park Point.
Yes. Billionaire Kathy Cargill has broken her months of silence on her intentions regarding approximately 20 Park Point properties that she recently purchased at above market value. Cargill spoke to the Wall Street Journal in a story published Saturday. She told the news outlet that though she still intends to occupy the vacation home she just renovated, she has turned sour on other ideas for beautifying the other properties after reading a letter from Duluth Mayor Roger Reinert, as well as news coverage and online comments from Duluthians. She said that there's another community out there with more welcoming people than that small-minded community, she told the Wall Street Journal, adding that she had considered putting in a coffee shop and building a complex for pickleball, basketball, and street hockey. Kathy Cargill has emphasized that the properties belong to her and her entity, North Shore LS LLC, and not the Cargill family at large. In December, Cargill declined to comment to the News Tribune on what she had planned and threatened legal action if anything ended up in the newspaper. She characterized the homes, many of which had been bodos, as pieces of crap. She doubled down on that statement in the Wall Street Journal on Saturday, indicating that mice and garter snakes were found in one of the homes. Residents raised concerns about the millions of dollars in purchases, including the prospect of increasing property values. Dawn Buck, who is the president of the Park Point Community Club, said at the time that some Park Point homes sold for nearly double their assessed value, and there are concerns about the potential tax implications for some property owners. Now, last month, Reinert sent a letter to Cargill requesting a private meeting at City Hall and a public meeting at the Park Point Community Club to share her plans. He did make it clear, however, that he understood her right to make the purchases to a private real estate market. He received no response. So then he enlisted the help of city councilors at a March 11 meeting in another attempt to communicate with Cargill, in the meantime encouraging residents to avoid the billionaire's large offers. Cargill told the Wall Street Journal that as far as her vacation home is concerned, she will make it even more private than it is. This is in response to the community's reaction. According to public records, Kathy Cargill is married to James R. Cargill II, who Forbes said is one of 12 billionaire heirs to the Minnesota-based Cargill, which is the country's second largest private company. The magazine said James Cargill had a wealth of $5 billion in 2023, ranking him 223rd on its list of wealthiest Americans.
All right. Well, Kathy Cargill isn't the only one visiting the area. Following Superior's decision to recruit comedian Charlie Behrens as a pitchman for tourism, Duluth is beginning to assess its tourism advisors.
Yes, it is. Duluth Mayor Roger Reinert made it clear Wednesday that a change of direction soon may be coming to the way the city markets itself as a tourist destination. Duluth currently pays an out-of-town advertising and marketing team $1.8 million annually to tout the city as a worthwhile place to visit. That team consists of a Minneapolis-based public relations firm and a marketing company headquartered in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. That three-year contract is up at the end of this year, and Reinert announced the formation of a 14-member working group to help the city prepare a new request for proposals to consider alternatives. Reinert said he believes it's hard to tell an authentic Duluth story if you're not a Duluthian. He said that we have a ton of talented, creative people who already live in this community, and voiced his hope that we will end in a place where tourism tax dollars are generated in Duluth, will end up directed and spent in our community as well. Karen Pionk, who's the general manager of the Sheraton Duluth Hotel, has been tapped to lead what Reinert referred to as a cross-sector working group with members from several industries, including dining, lodging, major attractions, entertainment, marketing, and the arts. Reinert stopped short, however, of ruling out a renewed contract with the city's current marketing team, saying a large pool of candidates is desirable and they will be welcome to respond to the pending request for proposals. But he also said that he would really need to be sold on the idea of continuing with the status quo. Duluth collects a hospitality surcharge on transactions made at local hotels, restaurants, and drinking establishments, and the proceeds of that tax are earmarked specifically to support the city's tourism industry. Reinert said that tourism has built the Duluth brand?
Well, for the last 3 months, we've been referring to the winter that wasn't. Spring is finally here, and so is the snow.
Yes, Mother Nature has a few tricks up her sleeve. Apparently, the late March snowstorm that finally moved out of the region on Wednesday left behind more than 2 feet of snow in western Duluth and more than a foot across most of the Northland. Roads and parking lots were being cleared on Wednesday, and people were digging out from under this storm. Although some schools were even canceled for a third straight day because buses still couldn't get down all the streets for morning pickup. Snowfall totals reported to the National Weather Service from the storm that lasted from Sunday morning into Wednesday morning in some areas included 21.2 inches just a few miles north of Two Harbors. Esko got about 18.5 inches. Bayfield, 16.1 inches, Solon Springs 15.4, Superior received exactly 15 inches, and Lake Nebagamon and Ashland each received 14.6 inches.
All right. Well, Maria, digging out from all that snow, on the Superior side, or maybe Papua New Guinea, there's an effort to locate a lost plane from our local aviation hero.
That's true. 80 years after it crashed in Papua New Guinea, an expedition is underway to find Marge, the P-38 Lightning flown by America's ace of aces, Richard I. Bong. A partnership between the Richard I. Bong Veterans Historical Center and the nonprofit organization Pacific Rex could reveal the plane's final resting place in New Guinea, a country roughly the size of California, halfway around the world. After World War II, the Air Force turned over ownership of all military aircraft to the New Guinea people, according to Brianna Fiant, curator of collections and exhibits for the center. There are no plans to bring the plane home. The Bong Center's primary goal is to document the search for Marge with video and photographic footage that could be used in future exhibits. With the recent introduction of Starlink technology to New Guinea, the site exploration could even be streamed live. The current Marge displayed at the center is a real P-38 painted to replicate the famous fighter plane. The one that rested outside of the Bong Memorial at the elementary school in Bong's hometown of Poplar was also a replica. The original Marge had a brief moment in the spotlight. It was built in December of 1943 and sent to New Guinea in January of 1944. Bong took possession of the plane in February and it went down March 24, 1944. With 27 victories racked up, Bong was on leave when the Marge plane crashed. It was being flown by First Lieutenant Thomas Malone. One of the plane's engines failed, and Malone was able to eject before the crash, according to Viant. He survived and was found by the 32nd Division out of Wisconsin and Michigan and returned to base. Justin Talen, founder and organizer of Pacific Rex, plans to start the expedition in May.
And finally, 73rd District Representative Angie Sapik announced that her first term will be her last.
That's right. State Representative Angie Sapik, Lake Nebagamon, won't seek a second term serving Wisconsin's 73rd Assembly District. She announced the decision in a press release Thursday, March 21st, and a video was posted on her Facebook page the following day. New state legislative maps drawn by Governor Tony Evers and signed into law February 19th factored into the decision. Under the new maps, Sapik said, the 73rd Assembly District changed from a nearly 50-50 Republican versus Democrat split to an overwhelming 62% Democrat seat. Assembly District 73 used to stretch south to include sections of Douglas and Washburn counties and all of Burnett County in 2022. It now encompasses a horizontal stretch of the state's far north, from Douglas to Ashland counties. Sapik said she voted for Evers' maps for the good of the party and the state. She didn't count herself out of politics completely, though, and she said her office is available to help through the remainder of her term. Quote, there will be ample opportunity for future political endeavors, she said, end quote.
All right. Well, we've been joined by Maria Lockwood, reporter for the Superior Telegram. Thank you, Maria.
Thanks, Robin.
And Rick Lubbers, executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org, SuperiorTelegram.com, and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more of the music of Nolan Selwood. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.
Don't you try to capture the night. You won't succeed in that fight. And oh, look, the turtle dove's coming up from above. And true friendship is a once in a lifetime kind of thing as like being comfortable.